A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 12. Babalut. After their conversation, once Din and Fett had stopped scuffling like Anuba cubs, Fett suggested that they take a few days before scheduling any other nights together up in Fett's rooms. Din agreed without arguing, honestly a little relieved. It was probably a good thing that he and Fett had finally talked, but Din was wrung out just by all of their conversation. He couldn't imagine pulling himself together enough to place his hands on that pillar again, to give over control, at least not before Din had had a solid night's sleep and some work to help order his thoughts. Fortunately for Din, Fett had plenty of work to hand out. The next several days passed quickly. Fett jumped right back into running his little empire, Din at his side, and an odd sort of routine fell into place without much effort on either Fett's or Din's part. Din hadn't lied, he was an early riser by nature, and quickly fell into the habit of meeting Fennec for first meal in the throne room. Fennec was easy to get along with, as long as no one bothered her before she'd had a cup of blue milk and some calf. She didn't make a fuss about Din sitting around with his helmet off, either. If she knew, if she understood, she kept it to herself. She'd been on Morak. She'd seen Din try and find someone, anyone else, to access the terminal. But she didn't make any sort of remark or comment about it, those furtive, tense mornings where Din made himself take his helmet off and eat with her and Nora, beyond telling Din, very seriously, that he needed a haircut. She wasn't wrong on that front, either. Fennec, Din was learning, was very rarely wrong. She had a bounty hunter's sense for people and an assassin's intuition for when things were out of place. That she used those skills to determine how long Din's hair should or shouldn't be was irrelevant. Fennec was also hard to argue with. Din's hair was starting to fall in his eyes and catch in the clasps of his helmet. Din took her advice to heart one evening and used a Verd knife to hack off a few inches of hair, cutting the mostly unruly curls away, and was rewarded with a genuine smile over breakfast the next morning. "You look better," Fennec said. She said it with such sincerity that Din blushed a furious red and couldn't look her in the face until he'd had a few steadying sips of Mayam, a faintly spiced red tea popular among the Tuscans. Ushib's blend was pretty good. "She's right, you know," Nora chimed in. Over the last few days, Din had learned that Nora preferred the morning shift. She had two sons at home in Mos Eisley and liked to be there for them when they got out of school in the afternoon. She'd been training Gita, the other Twi'lek Din had seen around, so Gita could take on the afternoon shift. Din had been right the first time he'd seen Gita behind the bar. He had recognized her. Gita's mother had come to Fett weeks ago and asked for his help. Gita had been kidnapped by slavers. Kasik had tracked Gita down and rescued her from what sounded like a pretty awful situation, and Nora had taken the girl under her wing. They both worked evenings to manage the ever-growing crowds in the palace and were looking for a few others to hire on. Fett's business was picking up. "You look like a professional," Nora continued. Din eyed her, trying to decide if she was teasing him or not. "I am a professional," he said. Nora smiled at him sweetly. Din had thought her timid at first, but Nora was anything but. She was reserved when she wanted to be, but she had a wicked sense of humor.
"And now you look the part."
Din studied the last rusty dregs of tea at the bottom of his cup and decided not to get too prickly with her. She didn't make Din's food, but she often passed it to him over the bar. He had a healthy respect for that. Probably wouldn't be a good idea to upset her, he decided, and drained his cup. The last swallow of the tea was what the Tuscans called marata, bitter but clarifying, designed to wake a warrior up and get them started on the course of their day. Din had had bitterer. Mandalorian calf tended to be heavy on small, dark, garky beans and light on milk, and didn't mind the earthy taste much, though Nora noticed him finishing off his cup and grimaced. Fennec chuckled. "Leave him alone, Nora. He's under his helmet most of the day anyway." "Which is a real shame," said Nora, in Rill, taking Din's cup. Hiding a face like that. Thanks for the food, Din said, pushing himself up and away from the bar, face warming again. Now he knew Nora was teasing him. He grabbed his helmet and jammed it back on, the metal muffling Nora's tinkling laughter. At least she's like that with everyone. He'd even seen Nora tease Fett, which Fett tolerated with patient stoicism. Fett had a certain fondness for Nora. Din hadn't asked, but he got the impression that Nora had been around during Jabba's days. Several of Fett's people were the same. Theron, Kasik, Nora, and Zero, the guard who'd been shot during the Hutt cartel's assassination attempt, had all been around for a long time. They knew Fett and got along with him. They followed his orders without argument. It was good that Fett had so many familiar faces to rely on. His outfit had grown considerably. Tatooine had never been much for democracy. Its people followed strength, and they followed credits. Fett was proving that he had both. Din had also gotten a closer look at Fett's operation over the past few days. So far, Fett was doing very well for himself. He'd had a few more settlements sign on as stopovers like Mos Pelgo, and now he had access to Mumble's Turnaround and a few of the other smaller smuggler lanes, which let him skirt Hutt space and get whatever goods he wanted off-world. Fett was moving everything from weapons to silicate to spice. He'd even sent off a couple of shipments of looted art he'd found in the depths of Jabba's palace. When Din had asked him why he'd even bothered, most syndicate bosses, in Din's experience, didn't care about art at all, Fett had only shrugged. "What am I going to do with it, hang it up?" Fett had asked. "The black market'll take just about anything these days. It's just more credits to me." The only kind of cargo Fett wouldn't move was slaves. He'd made that very clear. If that was a condition of Cobb Vanth's or a decision Fett had come to himself, Din didn't know. But Fett wouldn't be swayed on it, no matter how many petitioners came before the throne looking to trade in lives instead of metal or glitterstim. Din approved. Fett didn't have control over all of Tatooine, not yet. He didn't even have control over a quarter of it, really, just Mos Eisley, his section of the Great Dune Sea, and a few settler towns, though his influence in Mos Espa was growing. But people talked, especially on Tatooine, and word of Fett's refusal to freight with slavers would spread. If Fett managed to hold onto the throne long enough, he could probably disrupt the Sarrowlands trade in the entire Arcana sector. That would win him the loyalty of half the planet, and the hatred of the other half. That's why I'm here, Din thought. So far, there hadn't been any further assassination attempts or even any noise from the Hutt cartel, but Din spent most of his mornings lounging by the stairs, watching for threats, and most of his nights prowling through Mos Eisley, hunting for information, being seen, letting everyone who cared to look know that Fett didn't stand alone, that he had allies, and that Fett's allies were as fierce as Jabba the Hutt's had been. There would be time enough for prowling through the city later, though. Morning court would start soon, and Din liked to be prepared. He'd been keeping track of who came in and out, especially repeat visitors. Some just seemed to like the music and the alcohol, but he was sure that some were Hutt spies, too, trying to get a read on Fett's operation. Din had taken up his usual post and was watching the room when Fett came in, fully armored, helmet on, and made his way over to Din. "Morning," said Din, used to their little asides by now. Fett would check in with Din, then go across to Fennec, and then sprawl out on his throne to run the business of the day. Fett inclined his head. "Morning," he returned, vocoder smoothing out his words. "Any trouble?" Din shook his head. "All quiet," he reported. "It's too early for trouble." "Good," said Fett. He pitched his voice so it reached across the rest of the room. "Come with me. Shand, you too." That pricked Din's ears up. Fett usually called Fennec by her first name, which she preferred, unless Fett had important business. When he had business, Fett called her Shand, just like he called Din Jaren instead of Jarika or Mando. Something was happening. Din followed Fett, joined by Fennec, and they left the throne room instead of hosting the morning court. Whispers followed them. Fett brought them to one of the smaller conference rooms, standing aside to let them in, then closed the door behind them. "Well," said Fennec, as soon as the latch clicked. Her head was up, eyes bright and alert. She and Din could both smell the blood in the air. "What's going on?" Struck a deal with Oshek, said Fett, looking between Din and Fennec. Din blinked. They spotted Anuba. Din hadn't seen them around since he'd first stumbled into their meeting with Fett, but he knew that an alliance with the Warriors was one that Fett had been considering. He's agreed to ally with you, Din asked, frowning to himself. Fett nodded once, shortly. In exchange for some of our help, yeah. What does he want? It's been a while since I've lived on Tatooine, but back in those days, the Spotted Anuba never would have allied with outsiders. There aren't many of them left, said Fett. Oshek's one of the few that is. He figured out that he's got to do things differently if he wants to see his people survive. That's what he wants our help with. Fennec snorted. What, kidnapping settlers to adopt into the tribe? Fett quelled her with a look. No, he said. Killing slavers. That got Din's attention. Spotted Anuba's been hit by slavers? Yeah, to the south. They've lost a lot of territory. Those warriors you met with Oshek in the throne room the other day? Din nodded to show that he was following along. That's all that's left, Fett said. The rest of their fighting men either died before Oshek took over or in the time since. He's told me that he's got a few young warriors ready to prove themselves, but they haven't taken the right yet. Might not get a chance now. He doesn't know if the slavers have left any alive. Din whistled. Oshak had come to Fett with only a handful of other warriors. The Spotted Anuba of the old days had supported raiding parties 30 or 40 warriors strong. That was how they'd been able to overwhelm Anchorhead and other places, with numbers and ferocity. To be reduced to 5 or 6... The desert's been hard on them, Din thought. What happened? Fett shrugged. Ushub's told me bits and pieces, he said. There were more Spotted Anuba when I was with them, but not many. There were a few different bands. The Dunsea's large enough to support a few. I guess the largest band of them died out in some calamity in the Jundland Waste years ago, before the Clone War started. The other bands have been picked off in the Anchorhead retaliations, or fought themselves down to nothing. That's how Oshek became the chief. He killed the old chief and any warriors who followed him. Din winced. He hadn't been kidding when he'd told Mos Pelgo that Tuskens were a hard, brutal people. Usurping chiefs would often purge the ranks to make sure that the entire tribe was loyal to them and them alone, not an old chief or an old chief's heirs. So where did the slavers come in? Fennec asked. Oshek doesn't have enough people to defend his territory, Fett explained. He's been seeing other bands and slavers creep in. His usual lands are south of here in the high desert. Not much lives there, but you can cut through it and get to 6 spaceports. Oshek's being pushed out. How long has this been happening? Din wanted to know. Years, said Fett. Before Oshek was chief, even. But it's gotten a lot worse since he took over and killed Akharan and his followers. Ushib's been going back and forth, trying to convince him to accept help. Why is he interested now, then? Said Fennec. Din tilted his head in her direction, agreeing. He tells me that slavers have come in, taken over an oasis, Fett said. Killed the Spotted Anuba's livestock, taken their women, their young. Tuskens can't tolerate an outsider in one of their oases, Din murmured. So if Oshek doesn't have enough bodies on his own to take the oasis and his people back, he's ready to make a deal, Fennec finished. She cocked her head. What are you pressing him for? Mostly patrol and outrider services. Fett wrapped his knuckles against his cuirass thoughtfully, a habit of his Din had noticed over the last few days. Perimeter defense, if it comes to it. I wouldn't mind having a route to the south to run through, either, if we needed it. Oshek's never been too fond of me. It was the old chief who took me in. But if we can get Oshek to agree to let us through... So who's going? Fennec asked. Fett looked at Din. You've got the most Tuskra, Fett said, apologetic. Din shrugged. He didn't mind. They're not going to kill me and dump me in the desert, are they? Doubt it, said Fett. I'd be careful around them, just in case, but Ushib's vouching for them, and from what she says, Oshek's situation is pretty desperate. If he can't take the oasis back, he's finished. All his talk of new traditions will die with him. I'd rather have a modern-thinking Spotted Anuba on my side than an old-minded one against me. Given that the spotted Anuba Din had heard of back in the day had perfected the art of torturing someone to death over a period of months instead of days, Din couldn't disagree.
"I'll go," Din said.
Fett hummed. "Ashrak'll meet you outside," he said. "He wants to leave within the hour, get some distance in before the suns get too hot. But I've got another job for you after you've finished in the desert, if you've got the time."
"What is it?"
"On your way back in, assuming Ashrak doesn't crack you like an egg." Din scowled, though he was decently sure that Fett was joking. "Can you stop by Mos Pelgo?"
"Oh," said Din, relaxing. "That would be easy."
"Yes? Why?" "Just to check in," said Fett. "I've had people out there to see how things are going, but I trust you more than them. Talk to Vanth, see how the operation's running out in the desert where I can't keep eyes on it all the time. I've sent him guards, but still, can't hurt to have fresh eyes on it."
"Should be easy," Din said. "Usual rate?"
"Probably a little more. For the job with Ashrak, anyway. Consider it a premium rate." That meant that if Din got back to the palace, Fett would probably try to shove a Camtono of Beskar off on Din. Since the job involved spending an unspecified amount of time in the company of the most bloodthirsty band of Tuskens Din had ever heard of, he wasn't about to argue. Not this time. Hazard pay, Din thought.
"I'll go pack a kit," said Din.
"Try not to die," Fett advised. He turned to Fennec next. "For you, I've heard that Teemo's shown his face planetside again. If you could..." Din left them to their business, slipping out and into the hall. He knew the palace well enough by now that he skirted the throne room entirely, using a few of the service hallways to get to the lift up to his room. Several days at the palace had made the room feel more like Din's. He didn't have much by the way of things, never had, but he'd slowly started to fill the room anyway. He had clothes in the closet, a few data pads scattered around on the table, a maintenance kit for his armor, a box full of Beskar stuffed under the bed. Odds and ends accumulating in bits and pieces, filling in the gaps. It was almost like being on the Razor Crest again, except the view of the desert didn't change like the view outside the crest had. Din had decided not to examine that too closely. Din put together a kit quickly, packing what he thought he'd need into a bag that he slung over his shoulder. He rummaged around a bit, making sure he had enough weapons, then reached under his bed to pull out a few more knives. His eyes fell on his box of Beskar, now packed almost to its lid. The dark silver ingots shone. "I really have to figure out something to do with all of this," Din thought, pulling the box out from under the bed a little to look closer. Fett had given him plenty of Beskar by now.
"It's not been given," Din reminded himself. "I've been paid."
Still, Din had gathered enough Beskar by now that he could fully armor 3 or 4 warriors, if he had any warriors with him who needed armoring. He could certainly replenish his own stock of Whistling Birds several times over and still have Beskar to spare. "If I could find someone to forge Whistling Birds for me." Thinking about it, all of the Beskar Din had earned, but by rights now couldn't use, unsettled Din. He started to push the box back under the bed when his eyes caught on Fett's other odd little gift, the Jedi Holocron. Din hadn't thought about it since he'd thrown it in with a pile of Beskar, but now it caught his attention and snagged there, holding Din's eyes on its smooth glass face. He picked it up again. "I don't have time to mess with it," Din thought, turning it over in his hands. Fett hadn't known what the Holocron was, not really, except that it was a Jedi relic. Din bounced it in his palm for a minute, enjoying the even weight, then tucked it into his kit, too. He was going to Mos Pelgo after he was done with the spotted Anuba. Maybe Cobb Vanth would know something about the Holocron. He'd known more about the Jedi than Din had, after all. Maybe Holocrons had come up in the stories Vanth had heard. Armed and ready, Din left his rooms and made his way down to the landing pad, where Fett said that Ashrak would be waiting. Ashrak was waiting, as were his warriors. The suns had come up, but the temperature hadn't risen too sharply yet. Ashrak and his people were sitting on speeders, which made Din draw up short. Most Tuskens wouldn't ride them. Ashrak looked at Din.
"Your king has agreed, then?" he asked.
Din smiled underneath his helmet. He didn't correct Ashrak. If Fett wanted to be a king, he had the throne for it. Din wasn't going to argue with anyone over what Fett wanted to be called.
"He has," Din said. I'll help you in return for your alliance with Fett.
If you help me, it is done, Ashak agreed. You have transport?
I do.
Din had more or less taken over the battered old bark speeder he'd first taken out in the Jundland Wastes. He'd half kept his eye out for a newer speeder on his trips into Mos Eisley, but so far nothing had caught it. The bark was old, but it ran well. Din hadn't seen anything else that could replace it.
Then come, said Ashak. We have ways to travel, and the high desert will be too hot soon.
Din did as the Tusken asked and commandeered the bark again. The Nuxin, who minded the landing pad, didn't even bother to say hello. He was used to Din's comings and goings by now. Once Din had retrieved his own speeder, Ashak set off, his warriors falling into line behind him. Din took up the last position. The spotted Anuba were good riders for Tuskens. They all knew how to handle their speeders. The palace fell away quickly, disappearing into the shimmering haze of the desert, and before long Din found himself surrounded by sand dunes, the whining of their speeders the only noise in the morning air. This, he thought to himself, watching the raiders ride confidently ahead into a wide expanse of nothingness, might be a longer job. Din was right. Days passed. This far out in the dune sea, the sands were white and blinding. The heat began to build as soon as the suns came up over the horizon, and then it climbed throughout the day, threatening to cook them all even in the shade, before the heat dropped off into frigid cold as soon as the moon started to rise. Din had never been this far out in the dunes, not even on patrol for Boba. When he'd stayed with the White Bantha, they had claimed a portion of the dune and canyon land west of the Jundland Wastes. They'd never ventured this far south and east. Din thought that the nearest settlement might be Wayfar, but he wasn't sure. He was far past any landmark he recognized. Ashak and his warriors did the bulk of their traveling at dawn and dusk. They made, admittedly, good time. Din wasn't sure if the speeders, all reclaimed barks or similar Imperial-style models, had come from Fett, or if Ashak had paid the sand price. But however Ashak had acquired them, the speeders let his warriors make good time skimming over the sands, even with traveling hours limited by the weather. Din was glad he'd brought his own borrowed bark and hadn't bothered to find something newer, something he'd be less familiar with. He was able to pilot most speeders, but if Ashak decided that Din's Beskar was worth more than any potential alliance with Fett, Din wanted to be on a speeder he knew he could get away on. 2 days out into the desert, though, Din found himself relaxing. The spotted Anuba were, despite their reputation, more or less like any other band of Tusken warriors Din had interacted with. Ashak kept good order and a firm grip on his fighters. One or two of them would peel off at dusk and go hunting, braving the nighttime cold to bring back a meal for the morning, and they all shared their canteens and black melons with Din easily enough. The band of warriors slept during the day in an effort to avoid the worst of the heat or the cold. Ashak knew where all of the secret places were in the sands, all of the sun shelters and abandoned settler homes, the wells and occasional caves and bantha wallows. At night, after they'd traveled as far as they could, before the falling temperatures threatened to become dangerous, they gathered around a fire, ate their meals, and told stories. The spotted Anuba's story singer was named Ashasta. He was pretty good. So far, he'd only walked the raiding party through the first age of Tusken life. The rich jungle planet Tatooine had once been, the Tusken ancestors' pride and reliance on technology, their enslavement at the hands of a monstrous race of off-worlders. But Din liked listening to Ashasta. He was surprised that Ashasta told other stories, though. The White Bantha story singers had told the whole of Tusken history all at once, without stopping or breaking that history into smaller pieces. That Ashasta would stop and tell another story took Din by surprise. Ashak's people are different than I expected, Din thought to himself, on the second night in the desert. Ashasta had started to tell of the Tuskens' attempts to break free of their masters, a gory epic that ended with Tatooine transformed into a bare, sun-blasted desert, but free of off-worlder influence. But then he'd stopped in the middle to tell a different story about a proud young warrior who'd gone off into the desert and met a great spirit instead. It wasn't that Ashasta's story wasn't interesting or entertaining. The spirit had apparently taken the form of a crate dragon and offered to devour the warrior's enemies, and Din was paying enough attention that he'd be able to recreate the story for Grogu later. But it was odd that the spotted Anuba, known around the Dune Sea for their fanatic adherence to the oldest of Tusken customs, would break from tradition like this.
The speeders are odd, too. Din kept circling back to that. Most Tuskens wouldn't touch a speeder. They hated technology to the point of fanaticism, unless they'd made it themselves. All the tribes Din had stayed with had preferred to ride banthas or to walk. He'd heard that the spotted Anuba rode bladebacks, but a rusty old bark wasn't a bladeback, and if any warrior from the more traditional tribes caught sight of Ashek and his warriors on swoop bikes and speeders, it would be war. Most tribes wouldn't risk it. But now the spotted Anuba will. It was, Din thought, all Ashek's doing. The new chieftain was very strange. For a warrior who was supposed to be the most ferocious defender of the old ways, Ashek had embraced the new. No wonder he needs Fett's help, Din thought. He could see why Ashek had so few warriors behind him. Din couldn't imagine the majority of the tribe he'd heard of as a young man falling in line behind Ashek's radical ideas. The spotted Anuba of 20 years ago had hunted settlers for sport, had burned towns, had killed any and all outsiders who'd crossed their paths. Ashek was willing to work with Fett, willing to strike a deal. That was new. That, Din thought to himself, bears thinking about. Ashasta's voice rose and fell, following the campfires that flickered and jumped. A black melon made its way around the circle. Another warrior, this one called Akin, who so far had been the most difficult of the band for Din to get a read on, stood guard at the mouth of the cave they had settled into for the night. The stars were bright beyond him. Din was sitting cross-legged in a circle with the rest of the warriors. A polishing rag was being passed around after the melon, and Din was comforted by the familiar ritual of listening to stories and cleaning weapons. That, at least, hasn't changed, he thought. He'd done the same thing on hunting parties with the White Bantha years and years ago. Din finished polishing his blaster, working sand out of the weapon's creases, and passed the rag to the warrior on his left. He turned his attention back to Ashasta's story. Din's grasp on spoken Tuscan wasn't as good as his grip on Tuscan sign. His mouth wasn't the right shape, and when he spoke Tuscra, Din had been told his accent was atrocious. But he could still follow along, though, as Ashasta sang his tale. Din just had to listen harder. Ashasta was still telling the story of the warrior who had met a great spirit in the sands. The spirit had appeared to the warrior in the form of a dragon and offered to devour the warrior's many enemies if the warrior would defeat the dragon's one enemy in return. The proud warrior had agreed, thinking he'd made a good deal. The warrior had had enemies without number, and the dragon had only had one. Din winced behind his helmet. He could see where the story was going. Sure enough, the dragon kept its word and killed all of the warrior's enemies, devouring them, gorging itself on hundreds of thousands of lives, until there was no one left on Tatooine to stand as the warrior's enemy. Then the dragon had demanded that the warrior go into the desert and fight the dragon's enemy, which was the wind itself, for the wind refused to be still and let the dragon fly away to find new hunting grounds. The warrior couldn't fight the wind. He tried and lost, badly. The dragon was infuriated and ate the warrior too as punishment for his failure. Only the dragon's blind rage saved Tatooine. The dragon ate the warrior whole, weapons and all, and the warrior cut his way out of the dragon's belly, freeing the rest of the people the dragon had devoured. Tuscan stories were told to teach a lesson. Din could grasp this one pretty easily. If you're going to make a deal with an outsider, he thought, make sure you understand the terms. Whether this was a cautionary tale for Ashek, warning him not to make a deal with Fett before he understood exactly what Fett wanted, or if this was just a story Ashasta liked to tell, Din didn't know. Story singers were allowed to counsel their chieftains. They kept the Tuskens' history so they could pull advice from the past. But right after he finished that story, Ashasta jumped smoothly back into the story of the Tuskens' liberation, so Din couldn't tell what Ashasta's point was. Maybe he just liked to sing. Din surreptitiously looked over the rest of his companions. If they were bothered by Ashasta's erratic style, they didn't show it. A couple of the warriors were even nodding along. Ashek was cleaning his Gaderfi carefully. Din studied the weapon out of the corner of his eyes. Ashek's Gaderfi was made of polished red cedru wood, like any chieftain should be. The designs carved into it were intricate. Ashek would have carved them himself. No warrior touched another's Gaderfi. Ashek's weapon was rich with stylized blade backs and notches to mark battles won, with trees and stars and other secret symbols mapped out down the length of the Gaderfi. They told the story just as well as Ashasta did. Ashak had survived many battles. He was respected by the few tribesmen who remained. Ashak caught Din looking and made a deep, guttural sound in the back of his throat. "You are a warrior," he signed, jerking his chin at Din's spear. "Do you want to spar?" Din would rather not get anywhere near that Gaderfi if he could help it. "Not tonight," Din signed back, carefully deferential. He'd declined 3 nights in a row now, each time choosing his words as carefully as he could. He didn't want to spar and risk injury alone out here, but he didn't want to offend Ashak either. Ashak chuckled. "Another night, then." The young chieftain drew sparring circles every night as the group stopped, and Ashak put his warriors through their paces. He was a good, fierce fighter. His warriors were good, too, but so far none of them had been able to disarm Ashak or force him out of the sparring circle. That's why Ashak is the chief. Tonight, Ashak sparred with Ashasta after the story singer had finished his songs. Ashak won with a particularly brutal blow to the side of Ashasta's knee that had Din wincing behind his helmet. Ashasta limped away, leaning on his own Gaderfi for support. Tuscans very rarely had a ready supply of Bacta. "Yeah," Din thought to himself, watching Ashasta clumsily tend to his injury while Ashak preened victorious. "I'll pass." He managed to stave Ashak off for another 2 nights. Finally, on the 5th night out in the desert, Ashak drew a broad circle in the sands and looked at Din. Ashak had fought the rest of the warriors in their little band, and Din knew that they had to be getting close to the oasis now. There wasn't much high desert left. Ashak leveled his Gaderfi at Din. "Enough," said Ashak. He gestured toward the circle. "Spar with me." Din balked. "Are you Tuskra or not?" Ashak demanded, hands moving fast. "Come, come, spar. Prove you are a warrior. Our enemies are near. How do I know I can trust you if you will not fight with me?" "Fine," Din signed, quick and abrupt. There would be no use fighting it, not if Ashak's mind was set. Tuskens respected strength and skill above anything else, and Din hadn't proved himself to Ashak. Din had killed a crate dragon, had ridden and fought with White Bantha's best, but to Ashak, those were just stories on the wind. Din stepped into the circle and held his arms out. "I don't have a Gaderfi." "Use what you want," said Ashak. "Your spear, your blaster." Din briefly entertained the idea of using the darksaber. That would definitely surprise Ashak, but decided against it. He'd kept up his furtive practice, going through the handful of forms he'd learned watching Kukruk very early in the morning or very late at night when he was alone in his rooms, but Din still wasn't very good with the thing. The Jedi's forms didn't come naturally to him, and the darksaber was awkward and unwieldy in his hands. Din drew his spear and dropped into a loose, ready stance. He narrowed his eyes. Ashak would have the advantage. He'd drawn the circle, and though Din got the distinct sense that Ashak was a young chieftain, he was still a chieftain, he'd defeated all of the other warriors who challenged him. "He'll be lighter and faster than me, too." Tuskens wore no armor. Din settled deeper into his stance, tucking the shaft of his spear against the inside of his arm, folded close to his side. He shifted his grip. He waited. Ashak didn't even have Fett's thin patience in the sparring ring. He stepped into the ring, freed his own weapon from his back, and surged forward with a furious cry. Ashak was fast. He came out swinging, his Gaderfi whistling through the air in a brutal arc. Din didn't give any ground, not yet. He leaned back to avoid the blunt end of Ashak's weapon, but kept his stance rooted and lashed out, viper fast, with his spear. Din cared less about hurting Ashak than he had about hurting Fett. Ashak wouldn't pull his punches, not for a warrior outside of his own tribe. Din wouldn't pull any blows either. The keen point of Din's spear drove Ashak back into the side. The Tuscan skipped back through the sand, light on his feet, and switched his grip. For his second strike, he came at Din with his Gaderfi's hooked end, ready to pull Din off balance or try to pry some of his armor away, but Din shifted his grip too, bracing his spear against his good arm and using it like a stave. He caught Ashak's hook. The spear sang with the impact, force resonating against Din's hand, his arm. Ashak grunted and tried to tug, to pull Din's weapon out of his hands along with Ashak's Gaderfi, If he disarmed Din, the match would be over. Not so fast, Din thought, his blood beginning to rise. The simple joy of a good fight was beginning to fizzle in his chest. He switched techniques again, keeping his grip but pushing off with his good arm, letting the spear be a spear. It dropped underneath Ashek's hook, and Din sliced sideways, forcing Ashek to fall back again or risk getting skewered. The spearhead cut through the first few tattered layers of Ashek's robes. Scraps of fabric flew. Ashek snarled something insulting and came back with a fierce two-handed overhead strike. This time it was Din who gave up ground. Trying to turn aside that much force would hurt, and Din still had some days out in the desert ahead of him. Ashek's Gaderfi hit the ground, sand flying. Din whistled, impressed despite himself. A blow like that would crack rock. Not Beskar. If the Dark Trooper hadn't been able to crack Din's armor, nothing but more Beskar would. But still. Din wasn't armored from head to toe. There were gaps in his armor, and a broken bone out in the sands could be a death sentence. I need to end this quickly, he thought. Din didn't know Ashek well enough to rely on having more endurance. Ashek was fast, fierce, and very strong. I'll have to outsmart him. That would mean taking a risk and hoping that Ashek didn't know how strong Beskar really was. But I want to win. Din decided that the risk was worth it. He let the spar continue as it had for another half minute, the two of them trading blows that either glanced off to the side, deflected by their respective weapons, or didn't connect at all. Then Din deliberately stepped into the path of one of Ashek's strikes. This blow came sideways, so Din wasn't worried about Ashek generating as much power, and it caught Din at the side of his chest plate. Din didn't have to fake the sound he made. All of his breath rushed out of his body. The Beskar took the brunt of the blow, ringing and vibrating as the force of the blow passed through it, the note low and rattling in Din's teeth. But Din's Kuta caught some too, and the impact drove his breath away. Din stumbled. He let his spear waver, drop toward the sand. The other Tuskens cheered. They'd fallen for it. But will Ashek? Din thought, feigning a deeper stumble. His chest burned. He'd bruise something fierce. He'd have to think of something to say to Fett when he got back. Din didn't think that Fett would be very pleased. But the bruise and Fett's potential displeasure would be worth it. Ashek fell for Din's little play, too. He roared in triumph and brought his Gaderfi up. Not for a killing blow. Din could see where Ashek was aiming. The chieftain meant to put Din on the ground, but not kill him. That was good. That meant that Ashek was serious about allying with Fett, that Ashek could and would act with honor. But he still fell for it. Ashek left his belly open. Din moved. He turned the spear and used both hands to punch the blunt end of it into Ashek's chest as hard as he could. The half-crouch Din had stumbled into gave him momentum. He folded the spear underneath his arm to brace it, used his momentum to draw back a little, and punched Din again. The second blow won Din the match. Both strikes had caught Ashek in his chest, where the padding of his robes was thickest, but the second blow threw him back. Ashek hit the sands, dust billowing. Din had the spear reversed and at his throat, point gleaming in the darkness, before Ashek could so much as realize what had happened. Din rested the spearhead there, shining inches above Ashek's throat. Ashek looked up at him. His breath rattled out of his mask, just as ragged as Din's. Yasta, Din panted. Ashek looked up at him for another long second, his hand still curled around his Gaderfi. His warriors were deadly silent. Finally, Ashek nodded. He let go of his weapon. It fell into the sands. Din grinned. His chest throbbed. He pulled the spear away, sweeping it to the side so the rest of the warriors would relax, and offered Ashek a hand. The chieftain took it and let Din haul him up. You fight well, he said grudgingly, once Din had set him back on his feet. Ashek rubbed his chest. Was it the White Bantha who taught you so well, or your own kind? Both, Din signed. He tucked his spear back into its place against his back. Ashek snorted. The White Bantha should not have let you go, he said. You would be chief by now if you had stayed. Din's hands froze for a moment. Thank you, Din said, carefully, surprised. He wondered again just how Ashek had managed to survive to be chief in his own right. Din couldn't imagine that Ashek's bold ideas had won him much favor with the rest of the Spotted Anuba. The White Bantha had offered Din a place among them, but he never would have become their chief. They'd accepted him as Tuskra after Din had proved himself capable of handling their way of life, but they never would have forgotten how they'd found him, injured and alone, an outsider. Ashek waved Din off. "You will ride beside me today," he said. "You are very good. The rest of you." He turned his attention to the other warriors, who were murmuring among themselves with small signs. "Should watch this one. He fights well." Din straightened up a little, pleased. If they respected him, the Spotted Anuba were less likely to shoot Din in the back. And his strength would reflect well on Fett, too. Definitely worth the bruise, Din thought, resisting the urge to rub his own chest. He'd have to find time before they rode off at dawn to take a look at it. He was pretty sure Ashek hadn't cracked any ribs, but it wouldn't hurt to check. Ashek went off to nurse his own injuries, and possibly a little bit of his pride, leaving Din to get mobbed by the other warriors, who all wanted to know where Din had learned to fight, if he was as good with a Gedarfi as he was with a spear, if they could try some of his moves. Din let them, more convinced than ever that the warriors of Spotted Anuba were all newly blooded, just barely tipped over into adulthood. They were reverent with his spear, and Ashasta even let Din take a few swings with his own Gedarfi. They were painfully young, all of them. The older warriors must have died out in the Anchorhead retaliations, or been killed by Ashek. Din tolerated the Tuscan's questions easily enough. Din did manage to slip off for a little before the sun started to rise. He peeled back his Beskar and his Kuta to take a look at the damage. Ashek had left him with a straight, long red bruise that followed the line of Din's cuirass. It was swollen and tender to the touch, but when Din laid a hand flat against his ribs and breathed, he didn't feel any stabbing pain and he didn't have too much trouble filling his lungs. So, at worst, his ribs were only cracked. He stuck a back to patch on anyway and suited back up, rejoining the Spotted Anuba in time to climb up onto his speeder and join them across the sands. The Bacta's coolness settled him some. The stars lingered as the suns rose. The sky shifted from deep blue to black to lightning shades of gray, then pink and purple and blue, blue, blue. They slept away the hottest part of the day in an empty, lonely settlement, then took to the desert again at dusk. Finally, as the temperature began to fall off its precipice and the moons had cleared the horizon, Ashek pulled off the high sand road and took them down into the lower desert. Cedar trees grew here, gnarled and weathered. Stone outcroppings nudged their way out of the sand. Din's visor picked up animal tracks. No banthas wandered this deep in the desert, but bladebacks had been by to sharpen their tusks on the cedar trees, and womp rats scurried from outcrop to outcrop, chewing the tough, woody plants that grew in every thin patch of shade. "There's water nearby," Din thought. "We must be close." Ashek held up a fist, signaling the little caravan to stop. They did, killing their speeders and leaving them in the shelter of a knot of cedar trees. "We go on foot from here," Ashek explained, hands moving quickly. "There is an oasis. Slavers have overtaken it to use as a stopover on the way to the southern towns. It is ours." Din nodded. He understood. Ashek touched Din's shoulder. "Will you be blindfolded?" he asked. "We cannot have an outsider know where our secret waters hide." Din hesitated. He understood. He did. He'd hidden precious things all over the galaxy, had only shown Cara Dune and Greef Karga where his covert had once hidden because he'd had no other choice. But the idea of being unable to see the Spotted Anuba around him made adrenaline pulse behind his teeth. "My people have tolerated most of my new ideas," Ashek said. "But they will not stand for this." Din signed "fine" sharply, before he could change his mind. He was on a job. Fett was counting on Din to do well. Din had won Ashek's respect, and Ashek needed Din's help. Din could trust Ashek at least this far. "Thank you," Ashek said. His gratitude made Din feel a little better. "We will guide you." He gestured to another warrior, who brought over a long strip of dark fabric.
Din bent his head and let Ashek tie it around his visor 3 or 4 times until the fabric was thick enough that Din couldn't see anything beyond it but a few vague shapes. He was glad that Ashek hadn't tried to take off Din's helmet.
"Calm down," Din told himself as his body started to react to his lack of eyesight.
He forced his heart to stay slow and steady, his breath even and quiet. If he turned his auditory sensors up to their highest setting so Din could hear every step and shift across the sands, well, Ashek didn't have to know that. A hand settled itself at Din's elbow.
"Itba," Ashek said, his voice low.
Din obeyed. He tried not to keep track of where they were going, but it was difficult to ignore decades of training. From the Cedru Grove, they went 40 steps south and 58 steps east, moving very, very slowly, single file. The desert chilled around them. Their feet were muffled by the sand. From the east, they turned halfway north and took another 20 steps. Din could see vague shapes. The rock outcroppings had grown larger, the trees bigger. They must have been near the oasis. Din could see the vague, blurry outlines of other plants, too, life thriving alongside the water.
"We are close," Ashek murmured.
Tuskra wasn't meant to be whispered, but Ashek managed it.
"I can hear them," Din signed back.
He could. His auditory sensors had picked up voices, most of them loud and boisterous. Most everyone he could hear was speaking Huttese, but he could just barely make out a few murmurs in Basic and one or two in Rill, and the secret language of the slaves, which Din had never learned.
"How good are your ears?" Ashek asked.
"Pretty good," said Din.
"Can you tell us how many?"
Din listened.
"More than 5 slavers," he said, tracking the Huttese. "Many slaves."
"Any of our people?"
Din shook his head.
He paused.
"What will you do with the slaves?" he asked. "Can they know about your oasis?"
Ashek made a quiet noise and pulled off Din's blindfold so Din could see his hands. Din blinked, visor adjusting to the moon's light, and watched him speak.
"The king has asked that I spare them," he said. "I will give them a choice. They can either join the tribe or be blindfolded as you were and led away. We will take them to a spaceport and have them leave the planet."
Din blew out a breath. He nodded.
"I can take the ones who do not wish to join you," he said.
He could stick them aboard the fly and take them to Boz Pity or wherever Vanth's network wanted them to go.
"Send them to the palace, to the king."
"Then we will leave them alive," said Ashek, pleased. "You're Tuskra. We know you will keep your silence." Din looked around. He'd seen oases before. This one was much the same as all the others. A wellspring in the ground, a shallow pool protected on all sides by rocks tall enough to shield the waters from the suns. Now that the blindfold was gone, Din could see the shape of the slaver's camp on the far edge of the oasis. They'd started a fire and smashed most of the Tuscan huts. All of the slaver's transports were Model Ts or landspeeders like them. The slavers were drinking. One or two were up on the rocks, nominally keeping a lookout, but the rest were by the water. Din held up a hand and switched his visor over to thermal imaging.
"I count 11 slavers," he said. "It's hard to say how many captives they have."
There was a large clump of heat signatures all huddled together. Din could guess at a few species by the variation in heat signatures. Tuscans ran cooler than humans, Rhodians cooler than both, and Wookiees very hot. He counted at least one Wookiee, a young one by the size, a handful of Tuscans, a few humans, and a Rhodian.
"Some of your people are here, at least," Din said.
"What are the slavers waiting for?"
"Transport," said Ashek. "Safe passage through the desert."
"Then we should move quickly." Ashek nodded.
"Take the slavers on the rocks," he instructed, hands moving even faster now that the adrenaline was starting to set in. "We will take the ones on the water."
Din nodded and broke away, orders received. He pulled his cloak tighter around himself, using it to hide the shine of his Beskar, and slunk around the back of the outcropping shielding the oasis. He stuck close to the rocks to avoid being seen and checked his thermal imaging again. He had a window to grab one of the scouts without the other seeing. Din took it. He scrambled up the rocks hand over hand, pulling himself up easily and as quietly as he could, then crossed the rock top in two strides and snapped the lookout's neck before the man could so much as cry out. Din hefted the body easily and dragged it back, tossing it over the edge and dropping back down out of sight. Din's knees protested at the impact. He pulled the folds of his cloak tight again and waited, listening hard. No alarm went up. Din edged around the rock again, getting into position behind the second lookout, and waited. He'd let Ashek make the next move.
"Hey," said the slaver above Din. "Miko, where'd you—"
A Tuscan hunting call went up in the air, shattering the slaver's ease. Din moved, boosting himself up into the rock, blaster drawn, and shot the lookout between the eyes. The lookout, dead, toppled backwards into the camp. Ashek and his warriors had descended. Three of the slavers on the ground were dead before they had time to react. The rest managed to get to their feet, plasma flying. Din took a second to see where he was most needed and jumped into the fray. Quarters were too close to use the spear effectively. Din didn't want to hurt any of the slaves or the spotted Anuba, so Din stuck to his blaster, shooting the slavers he could get an angle on and clubbing the ones he couldn't over the head. A stunned enemy was a dead enemy, as far as the Tuscans were concerned. The fighting was brutal, but brief. By taking out the lookouts, Din had given Ashek's warriors enough of a head start that they were able to overwhelm most of the slaver's defense before the slavers could do the smart thing and retreat to the shelter of the rocks. One of Ashek's warriors fell, but that was the slaver's only resistance. The last slaver died on the hook end of Ashek's Gaderfi. Din didn't bother to participate in the battlefield cleanup. If any slavers had survived and were lying among the dead, hoping to escape, well, Tuscans had their ways of handling prisoners of war. Instead of checking to see if any slavers had survived and needed trussing, Din went among the captives. He was a decent lockpick, and once he'd gotten a few of the prisoners out of their collars and cuffs, they turned around and helped him get the rest out. The Tuscans, mostly women and children by their dress, but a few gangly young males just shy of warriorhood too, flocked to Ashek immediately, speaking excitedly among themselves. The rest gathered around Din. He let them, reassuring the ones who wanted to speak. He told them who he was and who he was working for and what their options were going forward. To Din's surprise, a fair few were interested in staying with the spotted Anuba. They'd all been captives together for days at this point, and some of the younger humans had grown pretty fond of their fellow Tuscan captives. Ashek welcomed them and promised the rest that he'd see them safely back to Fett's palace, where Din would ferry them off-world once he'd wrapped up his business on Mos Pelgo. The Rodian, the Wookiee, and a couple of the humans agreed to those conditions. The rest would stay. "You have kept your side of the deal," Ashek said, once the noise and confusion of the tribe's reunion and negotiations for the rest of the captives had been sorted out. He'd beckoned Din up to the top of the rocks, where the desert lay around them on all sides.
"I did," Din agreed.
"We will honor our side," said Ashek. "Your king may count on us. We will be his hands and feet in the Dune Sea, and will guard the borders as best we can. It may be some seasons before we can watch all of it," he added. He looked down at his new recruits. The youngest was probably 14 or 15, the oldest maybe 20. Din didn't envy them their next few seasons. Life among the Tuscans was hard.
"I'll tell him," Din said. "And if you need more help, let him know. I will help you when I can."
"It is done," Ashek agreed, making a pleased sound in the back of his throat. He and Din looked out over the Dune Sea together, sharing in the peace of a job finished. Din's eyes searched the horizon. It really was beautiful out here in its own sort of stark, desolate way. His mind kept catching on Mandalore, which had been just as desolate. The emptiness of Mandalore hadn't been beautiful. It had been sickening, almost. A thing to mourn. Tatooine's desert was exactly what it should have been.
Din had half-turned back towards Ashek, intent on wishing the chieftain well and asking if he could be taken back to his speeder so he could make the journey to Mos Pelgo, when he caught a flash of silver out of the corner of his eye.
Din spun around, searching the horizon. His lips parted. Ashek made a rumbling noise, concerned.
"What do you see?" he asked.
Din stared at the horizon, pulse racing.
He'd seen... It's a mirage, Din told himself. A desert trick. It's just because I was thinking of Mandalore. But I thought I saw... He caught it again. A silver flash in the distance. Far and faint, but utterly unmistakable. Beskar, he thought. Have you ever... Din sighed slowly, still staring at the spot where silver had flashed and disappeared. Seen anyone who looks like me? Aside from the king in the palace? Ashek asked. Fett, Din thought. Yes, he said, aside from him. The Tusken was quiet and still for a moment. His mask was just as unreadable as any Mandalorian's boisha. Myself? Ashek finally said. No, I have not seen any others like you. But I have heard of others. Goyra who do not show their faces, who hide together in the sands like burrowers and only come out one at a time. Din's heart leapt. Joy and trepidation flooded his chest. A covert, he thought. Not a band of Kreese's night owls or even roaming warriors like Fett, but a covert. It had to be. The pattern was right, the location. Tatooine was far flung and out of the way, but there was still work to be found. He stared out into the desert hungrily. No more Beskar flashed, and he knew the desert could lie and confuse. The other Mandalorian could be miles away, in the opposite direction of Din's speeder. But he had seen another Mandalorian. Hope was hard to crush. Where? Din asked, the sign made wobbly by his excitement. Ashek looked at him for a moment. I heard near Mos Entha, he said at last. Kark, Din thought. Mos Entha wasn't as wild or rowdy as Mos Eisley, but it wasn't a place Din would find himself welcome. Din was fairly obviously aligned with Fett now. He'd been around court long enough that he was sure most of Fett's competitors had gotten wind of his presence. Fett had taken over a slice of the Hutt cartel's territory. Mos Entha had never been Hutt space. It belonged to Lady Valerian, and she'd been trying to wrestle control of Tatooine from the Hutts for years. That didn't make her Fett's friend, though. Din had no idea what other cartels and operations thought of Fett. If Valerian would welcome Din's presence, since he wasn't with the Hutts, or kill him to send a message to Fett, Mos Entha wasn't safe for Din. But the other covert, they'd chosen a good spot. Populous enough that work would be easy to find, especially if this covert didn't have any issues taking job from syndicates and petty crime bosses instead of guilds, but not so overrun they'd be at risk of exposure. There were probably plenty of places to hide in Mos Entha, too. These others like you, Ashek said, his hands moving slowly. Do you know them? Maybe, Din said. He might. He'd been among some of the other coverts before. Some of his own tribe had escaped the slaughter on Nevarro. Din knew they had. The armorer had told him so. He didn't know who or how many, but... maybe. Din's pulse hammered. You fought well, Ashek said decisively. We will watch for others like you and send a messenger if we see any. Are these others Tuskra too? Din shook his head. I don't know, he said. Maybe, maybe not, probably not. Ashek made a rumbling sound. We will watch for them, he said. He used his Gaderfi to gesture back towards the oasis. Join us, he entreated. I will have Atima take you back to the speeders in the morning, and you can be on your way. It'd be rude to turn down Ashek's offer to celebrate with the spotted Anuba, so Din reluctantly let himself be steered away from the outcropping and its view of the desert. But even as black melons were passed among the warriors and the freed captives, Din's mind stayed with that flash of silver that he'd seen. It might not be a Mandalorian, he told himself, trying to temper his own expectations. There were other metals that shone in the sun. Chromium, hazing smelt, silverite. But Din had seen a flash of silver in the Jundland wastes, too, and he'd thought that flash Beskar as well. Beskar just wasn't like anything else. Most other Mandalorians paint their armor, though, Din reminded himself. He'd painted his own armor, too, before he'd had a full Beskar Gam. Would anybody else have as much bare silver armor as Din? I have to check, though. If there was a covert on Tatooine, Din could... Well, Din couldn't stay with them, not now, but he could ask for news, could try and find out if his own tribe had survived, who'd made it off Navarro, if they were safe. He could maybe barter with some of the Beskar he'd earned working for Fett, armor this covert in exchange for information. By the time dawn broke and Atima, one of Ashak's young warriors, blindfolded Din again and led him back to his speeder, Din had made up his mind. He was going to Mos Entha to look for this other covert. Din wanted to check in with Fett first, to see if Fett had heard of them, or if he had any boots on the ground in the city, but Din was going to look for them. He wanted to know what they were like. If they were like Din was, had been, well, Din would figure out how to deal with that when he found them. Din thanked Atima and tried to forget the number of steps between the oasis and the speeder. He set out in the direction of the suns, aimed for Mos Pelgo, filled with an even stronger sense of purpose than before. The journey back was easier. Din made the trip to Mos Pelgo in 3 days instead of the 5 it had taken to cross the southern Dune Sea. He was able to travel longer. The climate controls in his Kuta let him push on later in the morning and go through most of the night. Din still stopped around midday to take shelter in the shade, sleeping lightly and scarfing down dry rations, but he covered more ground alone than he had with the Tuscans. He didn't pass many signs of life. The odd tree, a few far-off herds of Bantha, one extremely cantankerous moisture farmer, but other than that, Din was alone until he turned off at the rock shaped like a sleeping Anuba and saw Mos Pelgo rise up out of the haze. He smiled. It was good to see it again. The town was bustling as Din passed through. Any damage from the sandstorm had long since been swept aside. The town hummed. Vanth met Din at Mos Pelgo's cantina. "Mando, welcome back," he greeted, voice warm. He lounged against the wall like he had nothing better to do, a lazy grin on his face. "Not being run too ragged, are ya? Seems like Fett's got you all over the place." Din hopped down off his speeder and shrugged, smiling too, even if Vanth couldn't see it. "I like to stay busy," Din said. Vanth reached out an arm and Din clasped it, letting Vanth pull him in for a rough slap on the back and a bump of shoulders. "How'd that thing on Buzz Pity go?" Vanth asked, stepping back a bit so he could look Din full in the helmet. "Okay. I ain't heard from Pyrrha, but I usually don't till she's ready to come back and make another run." "They'd arranged for another transport when I left," Din reported. He rubbed the back of his neck, exhaustion creeping up his spine. "We had some trouble on Buzz Pity." Vanth's sunny expression darkened. "Slavers? Bounty men?" "Both, I think," said Din. "Trandoshan outfit. Sloppy, but marginally professional. Chased us 3 days across the jungle before we managed to pick off the last ones. Pyrrha's a good shot." Vanth snorted. "She's something," he said. "Trandoshans, really. Did they follow you to Buzz Pity?" Din shook his head. "No, they pinged us as we entered the system from hyperspace." "Do you use Buzz Pity as a stopover a lot?" "A fair bit," Vanth admitted, scrubbing a hand through his hair. When he took his hand away, his hair stayed rumpled and fluffed up like the spines of a bladeback boar. Din tried not to be obviously amused. "We, the network, use dead planets a lot. It's easier than hiding a bunch of skittish folks in a place like Nar Shadda, you know." Din did know. Vanth's network operated a lot like a covert, it seemed. "You might want to put the word out that Buzz Pity's no good," Din warned, "at least for now. You have other places to move people?" Vanth nodded. "Oh, we got lots of places," he said. "Network's older than both of us combined. But I'll put the word out. How's the Kirik fly treating you?" Din let Vanth steer him inside the cantina, chattering on about the fly and Mos Pelgo and how things were shaking out with the town now allied with Fett's operation. Din even accepted a glass of Spotchka this time, though he did ask for a reed straw. Spotchka wasn't as good as Tihar. Din didn't say so, of course. Vanth was being hospitable, after all. But the taste was oddly fishy, briny in a way that made Din feel like he'd swallowed brackish water, so Din contented himself with sipping his glass. The whole town trooped in and out at one point or another while Vanth filled Din in. Din said hello to the townspeople he remembered, Koyi, some of the kids, a Silcax miner or two, and let the ones he didn't introduce themselves. "They're all mighty fond of you," Vanth said conspiratorially after the entire town had made the rounds. If you're ever looking for a change in employment, these folks would hire you on as marshal on the spot. And put you out in the sands to dry out like a dead womp rat? Din returned, amused. I'll pass for now, thanks. Vanth was pleased to hear that Din liked the fly. Din was pleased to hear that Muspelga was doing well. They'd adjusted to Fett's business easily. Border towns like this one had always run some kind of illegal material through them, though maybe not on Fett's scale, and appreciated the extra bodies. Any trouble? Din asked, now actively fighting the urge to sprawl out under a table somewhere and go to sleep. Rivals? Hut sneaking around? We've had some movement out in the Dune Sea, said Vanth. Haven't been able to tell if they're huts or somebody else looking to poach some of Fett's cargo for themselves, but as soon as they see the Tuskens, they turn round. You think somebody's going to try your defenses? Vanth shrugged, knocked back the last of his bochka. Probably, he admitted, but it ain't nothing we can't handle. Lot of idiots have tried to take us on over the years. I ain't got that armor no more, but we've got plenty of help here, and Fett's muscle of comms to the palace. We'll weather it whenever the huts decide to make a move. How about you, Mando? You tired? Din nodded gratefully and let Vanth talk him into spending the night on Vanth's couch. Din doubted that he'd sleep deeply, but he would probably sleep at least a little bit, and then he could head back to the palace in the morning, after he'd gone around Mos Pelgo and made sure everything was running according to the bargain struck between Vanth and Fett. Vanth's house was just as tidy as it had been the last time Din had slept here, and just as noisy. Din managed about half an hour or so before he was startled awake by the vaporator clanking so loudly it had him bolting upright with a blaster in his hand. Din blinked, disoriented. He didn't think he'd been dreaming. He hadn't been asleep long enough to dream. But his pulse was racing. His breath came in harsh and short. Too many nights out in the desert, he thought, forcing himself to settle back down. But no matter how deeply he breathed or how much he tossed and turned, sleep didn't return. Finally, Din got so frustrated that he levered himself upright and tugged his helmet off, dragging a hand through his hair. He'd cut it about as short as he ever did, and the familiar texture settled him some, but not enough that he'd be able to go back to sleep. Din sighed quietly and grabbed his kit. If he wasn't going to sleep, at least he could do something useful, like work the sand out of his weapons and armor. He crept out of Vanth's house and into the inner courtyard, moving slowly so he didn't wake Vanth. There was no reason both of them had to be up. Once he was out in the open again, sheltered by the walls of Vanth's house, with the desert sky yawning and star-flecked above him, Din perched himself on the edge of one of the vaporators in the courtyard and rifled through his kit. Most of his weapons were already in good order, given the scrubbing they'd got out in the desert with the spotted Anuba, but Din took the time to work over the creases in his blaster and the gaps in the darksaber anyway. He checked his knives, too, and his jetpack, until he was satisfied that everything was in working order. He reached into his kit to fish out his Beskar polishing cloth, and his fingers brushed against something geometric and hard. The holocron. Din had forgotten that he'd packed it. He'd forgotten to ask Vanth about it, too. Din pulled the strange little object out of his kit and studied it. It looked the same as it had in the palace. Maybe it was a little brighter, its glass brought to a shine by the starlight, but it was still cold to the touch. Holding it made that dim memory flicker again. Din frowned, trying to chase it, but he couldn't. He remembered hands, wooden pieces smooth against his fingertips. Before he could think better of it, Din stripped off his gloves, one after the other, and set his bare hands against the holocron's cool glass. He used a thumbnail to trace one of the seams in one of its faces, following a gilded edge. The memory kindled, brighter than before. Old hands, knotted and spotted with age. Brown skin, dark hair, dark eyes, not dark like Fett's, but dark like Din's. A red shirt, rough textured, homespun. Simple, Din thought, eyes half-lidded. Because we wanted to use what we had before importing things from off-world. And what we had was a herd of Gualamas. In his memory, the old hands guided Din's own, and Din's own hands were small. Look, said the man in Din's memory, as he guided Din's hands over the smooth, burnished pieces. Look closely. What do you see? A puzzle, Din murmured. He'd had that thought before. Fett had handed Din the holocron, and he'd thought that it was a puzzle. Very good, the man said. A puzzle box. Separate pieces working together to make a beautiful whole. And if you're very clever... The old man helped Din find a seam in the box, a joint where he could pull one piece of wood free and open the whole box in his hands. Memory Din laughed, high and delighted. Since you're so clever, said the old man, laughing too, I think you've earned a prize. My father's father, Din remembered abruptly, clutching the holocron so tightly the edges of it dug into his hand. His father's father had made puzzles, toys. Other things, too, useful things. Everyone in Din's village made something, clothes or houses or fences or toys. But Din's grandfather's toys had been the best. All of the kids in Din's village had loved him. The holocron's a puzzle box. Din studied the thing, half curious and half surprised, still caught up in the memory. He hadn't thought about his grandfather in years. Most of Din's memories of the place he came from were bad ones. The Separatist invasion had written over most of the memories Din had before, the good memories, filled them with gaps and static like a holodisk used one too many times. Do you have to be a Jedi to open it? Anyone could open one of his grandfather's puzzle boxes. He'd made easier ones for the kids just starting to learn, and harder ones for the adults to keep them occupied during the rainy season, when no one could go out in the fields because the winds and rains were so strong. But opening those puzzle boxes was just a trick of patience, of finding the right piece. Din didn't see why a Jedi puzzle box should be any different. He felt around its edges carefully, learning the seams, the pieces that lined up together. The gilding around the holocron's edges was just decoration, as far as he could tell. Feeling along the holocron's seams didn't show Din any secrets, though. He found seams, but not joints, no connections that could be twisted or manipulated. And after a few minutes, he gave up, holding the holocron up so he could get a better look at it. Maybe the kid will have better luck, Din thought, peering into the dull glass. Or maybe the holocron was broken, as Fett had said. There was that ugly crack in its side. Maybe whatever had broken the glass had broken the mechanism that let the holocron open, too. Mando? Vanth called softly, startling Din out of his thoughts. He nearly dropped the holocron, a hand twitching for his blaster before he could stop himself. Vanth paused in the doorway, held his hands up. Easy, killer, said Vanth with an enormous yawn. Excuse me, what are you doing up? Din made himself relax, and then he saw what was in Vanth's hands. My helmet. Din hadn't bothered to put it on before he'd come out here. He hadn't even thought about it. Its blank face stared at him from the cradle of Vanth's arms. Couldn't sleep? Vanth continued. No, said Din, staring at his helmet. His mouth was dry. He was suddenly very aware of the wind on his face. He hated that his hand, like it had a will of its own, like it still followed the creed that Din had broken, drifted towards his blaster. No living thing can see my face. No, thought Din, with effort. He tightened his grip on the holocron. He was past all of that. Vanth, rumpled with sleep, hair all over the place, still wearing that ridiculous red bandana, wasn't Din's enemy. He was Din's friend. And he wasn't the first to see Din without his helmet on. I don't follow the creed anymore. Vaporator bothering you? Vanth asked, holding the helmet out. A little, Din admitted. He didn't take the helmet back. I have a hard time sleeping in strange places. Fair. Need a nightcap or anything? No, Din said, softening. He tucked the holocron away. He could bother Vanth about it in the morning. Just need some time with the stars. Go back to bed, Vanth. Vanth snorted. You need this? Din shook his head. No, he said, quietly. It's not very comfortable to sleep in. Vanth made an agreeable noise. If he understood the significance of what Din had just offered him, he didn't say. He tucked the helmet back safe under the curve of his arm, then yawned mightily. Night, then. If you want, there's Spotchka in the kitchen. Din waved him off, a little shocked by the enormity of what he just let happen. He'd refused his helmet. He was letting Vanth carry it back inside. He'd taken it off before, more times than he should be able to count now, though part of him was still keeping track. But letting Vanth walk away with it. Vanth wasn't even a Mandalorian like Fett. Vanth wouldn't understand what had just happened, what Din had just done. But I trust him. Vanth paused in the doorway, just before he disappeared back into the house and out of sight. You know, he said sleepily, not looking at Din. It's good to meet you properly. Then he went inside. Yeah, Din said quietly, once he was sure that Vanth was gone. You too. Vanth, at least, had the good sense not to bring up their interaction in the morning. Din had put the helmet back on, too tired to be strong enough to face Vanth without it, but Vanth didn't seem to mind. He just shoved a plate of scrambled Jundah eggs into Din's hand and left him to eat. By the time Din had finished and Vanth had given him a more formal tour of how Fett's operation was running in Mos Pelgo, Din was ready to be back at the palace. The desert swam in front of his eyes, and it wasn't even mid-morning yet. It was exhaustion pulling at Din, not heat mirage. He wrapped up his business with Vanth quickly, covering everything Din thought that Fett would want him to ask about, everything he could think of, and then Din left. Vanth didn't know anything about the holocron, either. He'd never heard of one, so Din put it out of his mind. He had other things to worry about, like somehow keeping his speeder level as he skimmed over the sands on his way back home. By the time Din made it back to Fett's palace, he was thoroughly sick of the desert and anxious for a sonic and a night in his own bed. He felt filthy, caked with sand and dust, tacky with sweat, and exhaustion made his head swim. He still reported to the throne room, though. Fett took Din's report at the bar, having abandoned the throne for the afternoon, and once he'd heard Din's report of Fett's business, an alliance secured with Ashek and the Spotted Anuba, slave trade disrupted in the Southern Dune Sea, Mos Pelgo buzzing and humming along with industry, he sent Din, gently but firmly, up to his rooms to rest. "We'll talk this evening," he promised, tone rich. "Over something to eat, yeah?" That pricked up Din's interest some. A flicker of understanding cutting through the blurry haze in Din's head. He straightened up. "Over dinner," he agreed. Din didn't know if he was up for anything more than that tonight, but he was willing to see what Fett had in mind. Din was even more willing after he'd had a sonic and a nap. His room in Fett's tower was familiar enough now that Din could sleep deeply, and he did, without dreaming. He woke up more clear-headed than he'd been in a few days, a thick, heavy sort of satisfaction settling over him. He'd done well. He'd been gone a while, over a week, but Din hadn't died, and he'd secured the alliance with the Spotted Anuba, made sure Mos Pelgo was on its feet and holding up its end of the bargain. His body had even held up, despite the wear and tear of 8 or 9 days out on the sands. Din hadn't had any trouble with vertigo or headaches or even pain in his bad arm. His grip was still weaker in that hand, but Din was fairly confident that he was well on his way to mending. He felt so much better after his nap that he didn't even spend that much time agonizing over what to wear to eat with Fett. His kuta and armor were too heavy still, impossibly creased with sand, and he'd survived their last meeting, meal, in the Tatooine-style clothes Fett had left for him. Din pulled on a simple loose shirt and pants, grateful for the breeze coming through his long, narrow window, and made his way to the lift up to Fett's rooms. He was guessing at the right time, but thought he'd gotten it right. His intuition was rewarded when the lift opened and the rich smell of Tingilar hit his nose. Fett was settled at his work table again, bent over a datapad. He looked up when Din came in. He'd shed his armor, too. "Right on time," said Fett approvingly. He gestured at the stool opposite himself, where a plate and a tall, thin pitcher of water waited for Din. "Make yourself comfortable," he said. Din padded across the room and collapsed across the chair with a faint groan. His mouth watered. "You," said Fett, the corners of his eyes turning up with amusement, "have had a busy week, I hear." Din grunted at him and tucked into his meal without bothering to reply. The Tingilar was good and woke Din up, the spice clarifying. "You don't mind it," said Fett confidently, tucking in too. "You prefer being busy." "I do," Din allowed. He stretched, free of the weight of his armor, and hissed when his spine popped. "But maybe not that busy." Fett's chuckle was a dark, promising thing. He pointed at Din with his spoon. Anticipation frizzed up Din's spine.
"You could always work less," Fett said. "Stay here. Let me take care of you."
Din settled back into his seat, trying to decide whether to be embarrassed or curious. I was right, he thought, pleased that he'd guessed it. Fett had wanted him for more than just business.
"Does that line work for you?" Din asked, settling on curiosity.
That made Fett's laugh lighten. He flicked a bit of bread at Din, which Din caught and popped into his mouth with a roll of his eyes.
"You might be surprised," Fett said. "Not everyone's as hard to bribe with comfort and care as you."
"You like that I'm hard to bribe," Din murmured. "Means I'm loyal."
"True," said Fett. "You really didn't have any trouble with Ashak or Mos Pelgo."
Din shook his head. "All went fine," he said, taking another bite of Tingular.
"Good to hear," Fett said. "Then I want to ask, you want to just talk business tonight, or," and he pushed his own meal aside, studying Din with dark eyes, "do you want something else?"
Din swallowed carefully and took a moment to think about it. "More," said a part of Din's heart that could, if Din let it, grow greedy. "Something else." He thought about Ashasta and the desert, the story of the dragon spirit and its bottomless appetite. Din set his own plate aside and made himself look Fett in the eyes.
"What else?" he asked, still careful.
"I don't know how much I can handle tonight." He hated to admit it, but felt like he should. "Fett's asked me for honesty." "I didn't get much sleep in the sands," Din elaborated, feeling like he needed to justify himself despite the fact that Fett's expression hadn't changed. "Or in Mos Pelgo."
"All right," said Fett easily. "Nothing too heavy, then. But you do want to get out of your own head for a while."
Din chewed his cheek for a second, but nodded. He did. He just had to muster up the courage to say it.
"I can do that," said Fett. "Anything else you're not up for tonight?"
"None of what happened last time," Din said. He dropped his gaze again, shy. "The
blaster pulp?" Fett started, tone going wicked, and Din's head came up again to quell him with a glare.
"Right," Din said, cutting Fett off. "Any of that. Tonight, I mean."
"All right," Fett repeated, still easy.
Din blinked at him, surprised. He'd thought that Fett might want to push harder, but the other man didn't seem to want to.
"Fine by me," Din thought, relieved. He could handle letting Fett hurt him a little. He could handle Fett taking control. But anything deeper, more vulnerable. Din needed to get some sleep first.
"Finish your meal, then," said Fett. "I've got a few ideas."
That made Din's pulse tick up, anticipation spiking. He'd liked Fett's ideas so far. But he sensed that the conversation had shifted. This wasn't business. This was their other arrangement. And in this, Din did as Fett said. So he pulled his plate back over and finished it off, going so far as to mop up the last bits of sauce with his Jaipur bread. Fett ate too, which steadied Din's nerves some. He didn't feel quite so scrutinized. When they finished, Fett collected their plates, set them at the edge of the table, and stood, looking down at Din. Din looked back, expectant.
"Take off your shirt," Fett said, coming to a decision.
"You can stay where you are. We don't need to keep you on your feet for this."
Din wordlessly did as he was told. He was starting to see a pattern here, and tugged his shirt overhead without any complaints. He folded it neatly and set it aside, which got him a fond look from Fett.
"Have you ever let somebody blindfold you?" Fett asked.
Din blinked.
"Ashak a few days ago," he said wryly. "But other than that, I don't make a habit of it, no."
Fett chuckled.
"Good," he said. "We're gonna try it today."
He didn't ask permission, which made Din's blood thrill, even as nervousness began to build in his stomach.
"It's not that much different from what he's had me do before," he told himself.
Fett had asked Din to close his eyes several times now. This couldn't be that much different.
Din let himself believe that, up until the point Fett came around to the side of his work table and fitted a long, solid strip of cloth over Din's eyes.
He tied it gently, but tightly, so Din wouldn't be able to work it over his eyes or peek underneath it, and the cloth he used was solidly black. Din couldn't see anything. Din shifted, nervousness ballooning in his gut. Fett touched his bare shoulder, and Din startled, unable to see the touch coming. His breath quickened. "Good boy," Fett murmured, warmly. "Easy now. Take a second. Get used to it. I know it's strange. We don't realize how much we rely on our eyes until we can't use them." Din took several shallow breaths and resisted the urge to shake off Fett's hand, to tug the blindfold off and throw it aside. Din's hands were still free. He could if he wanted to. "Your word is the same," Fett added, picking up on Din's mounting anxiety. "Gev and this all stops, all right?" "He needs to hear me say it," Din thought. He licked his lips again. "All right," he agreed, voice thin. He made himself calm down. It was just a blindfold. If Din had let the spotted Anuba do it, he shouldn't have a problem letting Fett. "Very good. Just take a second." "You cut your hair?" Fett added, switching the subject a little to give Din time to adjust, to get his nerves under control. Fett set a hand against the back of Din's head and scratched Din's scalp, lightly. Din closed his eyes and leaned into the sensation. "Fennec told me I was starting to look like a stray bantha," Din said. Fett chuckled. "I had longer hair when I was young," he said. "But it's annoying to keep under Beskar, isn't it?" Din nodded, closing his eyes. It made no difference, not with the blindfold on, but he did it anyway. Fett kept up his petting. He'd figured out by now that Din liked it, that it was a sort of contact Din could allow without feeling stripped bare. "You always keep a beard?" Running his other thumb against the corner of Din's jaw, the touch was intimate. It made Din shiver, chill bumps breaking out down his arms. The pad of Fett's thumb was rough. "Usually," Din said. Fett hummed. "Do you ever think about shaving?" he asked. "Without this," he tugged a few strands lightly. "You'd look so sweet you could probably charm the Emperor out of his throne." Din flushed. "Not many see me without my helmet," he said, trying to cover his embarrassment. The Emperor was dead anyway. The last New Republic soldiers Din had run into had let him go, barely, but they hadn't exactly been thrilled to see him. "You're the only one who's ever called me sweet anyway. Well, you and Nora." Fett chuckled. "Shar," he said. Din's flush deepened, spread down his chest. Fett had called him that before, that and Shara. "That's what that means," Din said, his throat suddenly tight. "Sweet?" "Among other things." Fett smoothed his thumb down the line of Din's jaw. The touch was gentle, but it still woke the nerves in Din's face, sent sensations prickling across his cheeks. Everything was heightened by the blindfold. Before, Din had kept his eyes closed, but he'd always had the option of being able to open them, to see if he really needed to. He couldn't see now, and the distinction was apparently more important to Din's brain than he'd thought. His whole body was alert, reactive to every touch. Din got the distinct impression that Fett liked Din this way. Responsive, a little apprehensive. "Any other pet names you've been calling me that I don't know?" Din asked, aiming for dry. Fett had called him Share, had called him Jarika. What other words had he used?
Retusha
me, Fett corrected, approving. Pride curled through Din's belly. Even that was more potent than before, heady as a hit of spice or a swig of tihar. Fett kept one hand in Din's hair and trailed the other down the line of Din's throat. Din's pulse jumped again and Fett rumbled. His calluses caught and dragged against the soft skin underneath Din's jaw, the hollow of his throat, the thin skin over his collarbones. "What's that mean?" Din asked. Fett had said it to him in Mos Eisley before Din had taken the fly to Bosh Pitti in Yavin 4. "Darling, dearest?" "No," said Fett, tone dropping low. "It's a farewell. A goodbye between warriors. It means maybe we'll meet again." That was almost harder to hear than an endearment or a nickname.
Din had to swallow around a sudden lump in his throat. That sounded like a promise, almost, or a wish. Maybe we'll meet again.
Is there something I should say back? He asked. A counter?
Just the same words, Fett replied. Retour chez moi. Ret, if you're feeling less formal.
Retour chez moi, Din repeated quickly, locking the words in his mind.
Fett hummed again and took his hands away. Din had to resist the urge to tilt his head and follow them, feeling bereft. They'd just started. Fett had more planned than just blindfolds and petting.
Arms up, Fett said, like before.
Hands flat on the table. Don't hang on to the edge and don't go anywhere, okay? I'll be back in a second.
Din swallowed and did what he was told. Excitement buzzed underneath his tongue.
Despite what he'd said over dinner, Din felt his cock stir with interest. His body was learning that pain could feel good, too.
No, he told himself very sternly. That's not what tonight is about.
Behind him, Din could hear Fett rummaging around, the now familiar sound of that crate of tools being pulled out and inspected. Mouth dry, Din licked his lips and made himself hold still, counting down from 10 in basic and then HUD ease. Fett didn't leave Din to squirm for long. He returned in under a minute and settled a hand on Din's shoulder again.
We're gonna go easy tonight, Fett reminded Din, when Din startled a little at the touch and began to coil himself tight, braced for an impact.
But that doesn't mean we can't take you out of your head for a bit, yeah? I think you'll like this.
What if I don't? Din asked, nervous.
Fett shrugged.
Then we don't have to do it again, or I can save it for a punishment if you ever need one.
Din inhaled sharply.
Fett rubbed a soothing thumb against the shiny scar on the back of Din's shoulder blade.
You agreed to try anything I suggested, he reminded Din.
That made Din settle some, remembering the rule.
I did, agreed Din.
Good, said Fett.
So relax. I've got you. This is gonna happen, yeah? Unless you say for it out.
Din nodded. He felt air stir beside him and heard Fett set something hard and small on the work table. Din frowned and racked his brain, trying to think of everything he'd seen in Fett's crate.
Hold still, Fett reminded Din, and got to work.
He seemed to like touching Din. He started slowly, mapping Din's scars, pressing his palms into Din's flanks, getting Din used to Fett's touch and learning Din's body. He played with different touches, too. Featherlight strokes down Din's sides, a thumbnail pressed around a scar, deep, almost massaging pushes into the tense places along Din's back and shoulders. Din's body hummed under Fett's attention. Warmth began to spread. Sometimes Fett's touches edged on pain, but it was good, clean pain, like stretching out stiff legs. Din found that he didn't have a hard time holding still like this. There was nothing to shy away from. He just started to sink into a quiet, hazy place inside his own head when Fett's clever fingers found the thin skin just underneath Din's armpit and pinched. The pain was so sharp and sudden, bright as a star, that Din couldn't help but let out a shocked cry. His whole body flinched. Fett's other hand came down across Din's forearms, pinning his hands to the table. The strength in his grip was shocking. Din fought it instinctively, trying to wrench away. But, of course, Fett didn't let him.
Easy, said Fett, gentle tone gone. You can take it.
He didn't stop pinching. His nails dug in. Din gritted his teeth and swallowed any more noises. Fett was right. He could take it. He would take it. A pinch was nothing. It was only that Din hadn't expected it, that he couldn't see it coming. His eyes were open against the blindfold, but this was thicker than the gauzy fabric Ashek had used to blindfold Din on their way to the oasis. Din couldn't see anything at all like this. Fett finally let go, soothing the bright, aching spot with the pad of his thumb. The skin there was now so sensitive that even a gentle touch made Din grit his teeth, nerves singing. Fett let go of his hands, too. Din, chastised, flexed his fingers and tried to memorize the texture of the work table, to serve as a counterpoint to the little pain underneath his arm. Fett went back to his gentle exploration, but Din had been shocked out of his hazy calm now, his whole body on alert for the next pinch. Fett didn't make Din wait long. His exploration moved away from Din's back and sides, petted briefly over Din's stomach. Din couldn't help but shiver, the skin there so sensitive, so rarely touched, before moving up Din's chest. Dread and anticipation punched Din in the mouth. Fett's fingers had found one of Din's nipples. Din's whole body coiled up, shoulders pulling up to his ears, back bowing as Din instinctively tried to curl up without moving his hands away from the table and disobeying Fett. "That's not gonna help," Fett told Din, darkly amused. He hadn't even done anything yet, just set two of his fingers against Din's chest, one on either side of his nipple, but Din couldn't help it. He could feel a frantic noise trying to claw its way out of his throat, and forced himself to swallow it back. "I'm going to guess," Fett said, tone light, "that you haven't ever thought about how sensitive these can be, yeah?" He brought his fingers together, still mostly gentle, and tweaked Din's nipple. The sensation was electric. Din felt it bolt down his belly, all the way down to his toes. His breath hitched. Fett didn't have to work very hard to bring Din's nipple up into a hard peak. He didn't pinch or twist or dig in with his nails, but he didn't have to. The sensation built and built, spread out across Din's whole chest, and when Fett turned his attention to Din's other nipple and did the same, Din had to grit his teeth and breathe deeply like he was about to take a swim underwater, like he might not get the chance to take a full lungful of breath again. "Very nice," said Fett approvingly, once he was done. Din tilted his head in Fett's direction blindly, chasing the praise. Fett rewarded him by stroking a thumb down Din's jaw again. "Still good?" Fett asked quietly. Din nodded. His sides stung, his nipples ached, but he was fine. He was fine. Surprised, a hot blush spilling down his throat all the way to his chest, to his belly, but fine. "Good," said Fett. "That'll make the next part easier." Din unstuck his jaw. "The next part?" he rasped. He heard something move on the table. Whatever it was, it sounded small. It was cold when Fett picked it up and brought it to Din's skin, running it down his side in a slow stroke so Din's body could map the sensation. Din had to suck in another breath, startled by the change in temperature. He hadn't realized how cool it had gotten in Fett's rooms. Din's whole body was still warm, and Fett himself was a furnace. "What's this?" Fett asked, tracing the edge of the mostly faded bruise with whatever he had in his hands. It was definitely wood or some kind of synthetic material, not metal, and it was quickly warming, leaching heat from Din's body. "Sparred with Oshek out in the sands," Din said. "He got a good hit in." "You win?" Fett asked. Din nodded. "Good," said Fett, pleased. He moved the object again, bringing it over to one of Din's nipples. The object opened, settling in a loose grip on either side of Din's nipple. The sensation was strange. Not a pinch, not quite, but... It was, Din realized, a clamp of some kind. It felt simple enough, where Fett had it gripping Din lightly, almost like pegs Din would use on the Razor Crest to hang up his clothes or sheets to dry. There were two prongs to it, each one faintly ribbed to give a better grip, and if Din had to guess, he'd imagine they were connected by a fulcrum. A perfectly ordinary thing. Din didn't remember seeing any pegs or clamps in Fett's crate of tools, but that didn't mean anything. His body shivered again, some of the room's chill creeping closer. Fett set a comforting hand against the side of Din's face, smoothing some of the tension out of his eyebrows, the bridge of Din's nose. The promise of pain hung in the air between them. "Now," said Fett quietly, "this is gonna hurt, but I think you'll like it. Do you trust me?" Din turned his face blindly into Fett's palm, chasing the warmth, the comfort. "Yes," he said hoarsely. His whole body was buzzing and alive. The anticipation was awful and sweet, terrifying and heady. Even though he couldn't see Fett, he tilted his head back, guessing at where Fett's face was. "Yes," Din repeated. He pressed his hands flat against the work table. His heart thundered. "I do,"